Arthur flipped through the brochure till he found what he was looking for. At the back, there were a few maps of the planet. They were fairly rough and ready because they weren't likely to be of much interest to anyone, but they told him what he wanted to know. He didn't recognize it at first because the maps were the other way up from the way he would have expected and looked, therefore, thoroughly unfamiliar. Of course, up and down, north and south, are absolutely arbitrary designations, but we are used to seeing things the way we are used to seeing them, and Arthur had to turn the maps upside down to make sense of them. There was one huge landmass off on the upper left-hand side of the page, which tapered down to a tiny waist and then ballooned out again like a large comma. On the right-hand side was a collection of large shapes jumbled familiarly together. The outlines were not exactly the same, and Arthur didn't know if this was because the map was so rough, or because the sea level was higher, or because, well, things were just different here. But the evidence was inarguable. This was definitely the Earth. Or rather, it most definitely was not. It merely looked a lot like the Earth and occupied the same coordinates in space-time. What coordinates it occupied in probability was anybody's guess. He sighed. This, he realized, was about as close to home as he was likely to get, which meant that he was about as far from home as he could possibly be. Glumly, he slapped the brochure shut and wondered what on earth he was going to do next. He allowed himself a hollow laugh at what he had just thought. He looked at his old watch and shook it a bit to wind it. It had taken him, according to his own timescale, a year of hard travelling to get here, a year since the accident in hyperspace in which Fenchurch had completely vanished. 1 minute she had been sitting there next to him in the slump jet, the next minute the ship had done a perfectly normal hyperspace hop, and when he had next looked, she was not there. The seat wasn't even warm. Her name wasn't even on the passenger list. The space line had been wary of him when he'd complained. A lot of awkward things happen in space travel, and a lot of them make a lot of money for lawyers. But when they had asked him what galactic sector he and Fenchurch had been from, and he had said ZZ9 plural Z Alpha, they had relaxed completely, in a way that Arthur wasn't at all sure he liked. They even laughed a little, though sympathetically, of course. They pointed to the clause in the ticket contract, which said that any entities whose lifespans had originated in any of the plural zones were advised not to travel in hyperspace and did so at their own risk. Everybody, they said, knew that. And they tittered slightly and shook their heads. As Arthur had left their offices, he found he was trembling slightly. Not only had he lost Fenchurch in the most complete and utter way possible, but he felt that the more time he spent away out in the galaxy, the more it seemed that the number of things he didn't know anything about actually increased. Just as he was lost for a moment in these numb memories, a knock came on the door of his motel room, which then opened immediately. A fat and dishevelled man came in carrying Arthur's one small case. He got as far as, "Where shall I put?" when there was a sudden, violent flurry, and he collapsed heavily against the door, trying to beat off a small and mangy creature that had leapt snarling out of the wet night and buried its teeth into his thigh, even through the thick layers of leather padding he wore there. There was a brief, ugly confusion of jabbering and thrashing. The man shouted frantically and pointed. Arthur grabbed a hefty stick that stood next to the door, expressly for this purpose, and beat at the boghog with it. The boghog suddenly disengaged and limped backwards, dazed and forlorn. It turned anxiously in the corner of the room, its tail tucked up right under its back legs, and then stood looking nervously up at Arthur, jerking its head awkwardly and repeatedly to one side. Its jaw seemed to be dislocated. It cried a little and scraped its damp tail across the floor. By the door, the fat man with Arthur's suitcase was sitting and cursing, trying to staunch the flow of blood from his thigh. His clothes were already wet from the rain. Arthur stared at the boghog, not knowing what to do. The boghog looked at him questioningly. It tried to approach him, making mournful little whimpering noises. It moved its jaw painfully. It made a sudden leap for Arthur's thigh, but its dislocated jaw was too weak to get a grip, and it sank whining sadly down to the floor. The fat man jumped to his feet, grabbed the stick, beat the boghog's brains into a sticky, pulpy mess on the thin carpet, and then stood there, breathing heavily, as if daring the animal to move again just once. A single boghog eyeball sat looking reproachfully at Arthur from out of the mashed ruins of its head. "What do you think you're trying to say?" asked Arthur in a small voice. Ah, nothing much, said the man. Just its way of trying to be friendly. This is just our way of being friendly back, he added, gripping the stick.
When's the next flight out? Asked Arthur.
Thought you'd only just arrived, said the man.
Yes, said Arthur. It was only going to be a brief visit. I just wanted to see if this was the right place or not. Sorry.
You mean you're on the wrong planet, said the man lugubriously. Funny how many people say that, especially the people who live here.
He eyed the remains of the bog hog with a deep ancestral resentment.
Oh, no, said Arthur. It's the right planet, all right.
He picked up the damp brochure lying on the bed and put it in his pocket.
It's okay, thanks. I'll take that, he said, taking his case from the man. He went to the door and looked out into the cold, wet night. Yes, it's the right planet, all right, he said again. Right planet, wrong universe.
A single bird wheeled in the sky above him as he set off back for the spaceport.